What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Thursday, October 19th, 2017. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside Rogue One's own Gary Whitta.
I'm back.
So you were such a big hit, we had to bring you back. Everybody loved you.
I love it. And I only live like 5 minutes away, I'm an easy get these days.
That's why we like you.
Yeah.
We like anybody who's easy, who can just come on in and do this, you know what I mean? You got this Danny O'Dwyer kid quitting.
And I'm delightful.
You are
delightful.
People love me. What I like about you, Gary, is that you have such an interesting perspective on the game news.
I do.
Because you did the whole PC gamer thing.
Yes.
Then you've worked on video games, you've made movies, you play games.
Yes.
You've been all around. You know all sides of the business.
But I still think, like, primarily I'm just like a player of games. I just like, you know, I'm like everyone else, just like to buy the games and play them. And
sure. But you have that history. You have that background. You know how this works. You know how the blood and the sweat and the tears go into it. And you know how the sausage gets made.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. If you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about before. Give you a little bit of perspective, answering your questions, having a good time, and hanging out. Sometimes, Kevin even starts the stopwatch and takes time codes. There we go. We're working in conjunction, Kev.
I'm actually taking time codes off.
We're working in conjunction, Kev. It's all working together.
Off OBS.
So I love you, Kevin.
Should be fine.
I love you.
The time code's just for you, is what I'm saying.
Time code's just for me.
Well, no, the timer is just for you.
Time's just for me. But you're doing your job over there, is what you're saying.
Yep.
Just making sure.
Prepping the dock right now.
I love you so much, Kevin. Whenever you're ready, whenever there's a lull in the show, you come over here and you get a hug. It's dealer's choice. You come get it when you want to. If you didn't know, you can watch the show live as we do it on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Of course, Gary and I, we don't look at the chat. We only look at kindoffunny.com/KFGD. That's where you submit your questions about the day's news. If there's anything we screw up, though, and you're watching live, you need to go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Tell us what we screwed up as we screw it up. So at the end of the show, we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames or listening on podcast services around the globe. Housekeeping. Remember, party mode's up. It's up for everybody right now. Friday the 13th. It's an excellent episode.
Have you ever had like a perfect game where at the end of the episode there were no your wrongs? Like they weren't able to get you on anything?
Yeah. More, it's not often.
Not often.
It's not often.
Let's give it a try. Let's see if we can do it.
All right. We'll see what we can do. Party mode, Friday the 13th, up right now on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Slender up on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. It'll be released Wednesday, and then a new exclusive episode will go up on Patreon, or exclusive window. You know what I mean. Also, remember, Extra Life's right around the corner. November 4th, 24 hours of video games here to help sick kids. If you want to be part of the team and stream your video
can
games.
Can I come in for that? I would love to do that.
I would love to have you come in.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, back in the when I was on the Tested podcast, we used to do the October cast.
Yeah.
24-hour marathon, and we did the whole 24 hours, and it was brutal.
Oh, we do it too.
But I'll come in for like a bit.
Okay, sounds good.
Definitely.
There is, right now, that we're kicking around the idea that if we hit a certain dollar threshold, because we're trying to hit $100,000 this year.
Okay.
Donated by the kids.
What's your record?
It was like 56 year one, 82 or 3 year 2, now year 3, we're thinking
so 100 seems like a reasonable goal.
Hopefully, yeah. One of the goals we're going to put out there, we think, is that we're in the middle of the night going to go TP Mike Aransky's house from IGN. So if you want to go do that with us, you can do that too.
All right, let's see how it goes.
See, I'm not, you know what I mean? Maybe you can run you'll run the ship here with me while they go do that or whatever, because I ain't getting arrested or shot by old man Aransky. November 4th, Extra Life. You can be part of the team at kindoffunny.com/extralife, or you can just go and donate and watch along on the 4th. We'd love it either way. For now, though, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. 3 items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
Thank you, Kevin. Number 1, Nintendo apparently has dominated September's NPD. NPD, the whole thing with the top 10 games and all that jazz comes out today, later today, some ambiguous time today. I was busy winning the Kinda Funny World Championship on the morning show.
By the way.
Thank you very much. So I might have even popped before then. But what we do know as of when I was building the document, right, is the fact that this Nintendo put out the following press release. In September, the Nintendo Switch system was once again the top-selling current-generation console hardware, according to the NPD Group, which tracks video game sales in the United States. This marks the third straight month that Nintendo Switch has been number one, and the fifth time overall in the last 7 months since its launch. Nintendo Switch has already surpassed 2 million units sold in the US alone, and has yet to go through its first holiday shopping season. When combined with the Nintendo 3DS family of systems and the plug-and-play Super Nintendo Entertainment System Super NES Classic Edition system, Nintendo systems claim 2/3 of the month's total video game hardware sales. Nintendo Switch games again occupied multiple spots in the list of best-selling individual games for the month, including Mario Plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle from Ubisoft at number 7, The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild at number 10, and Mario Kart 8 Deluxe at number 11. Also, The Metroid Samus Returns game for the Nintendo 3DS family of systems debuted at number 8. Nintendo Switch aims to continue its momentum into the holidays with launches of Fire Emblem Warriors on October 20th, Super Mario Odyssey on October 27th, can't effing wait, Doom, The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim from Bethesda Game Studios on November 10th and November 17th, respectively, and Xenoblade Chronicles 2 on December 1st. Additionally, Nintendo 3DS will see the arrival of Fire Emblem Warriors on October 20th, Mario Party the Top 100 on November 10th, and Pokemon Ultra Sun and Pokemon Ultra Moon on November 17th. Gary, what is your read on Nintendo off to the races?
I, for one, welcome our new Nintendo overlords. I'm loving this era of this kind of purple patch that Nintendo is going through right now. We talked about this last time I was on the show. They're just killing it right now.
Yeah,
right?
This
is probably the greatest, the best stretch that they've had in terms of commercial success and gamer satisfaction. This is like delivering quality games and a great experience. Like this is the best they've been. I think I said since like the days of the Super Nintendo. It's just brilliant.
Would you go that far?
It's
always that thing of you have to like quantify what we're talking about, right? Obviously, the Wii sold so well, but was so much shovelware.
I know, but the back end of that story trailed off badly.
I feel like everyone was so excited for the Wii at launch.
I would say there are already more great games on the Switch than there ever were on the Wii. Contentious?
A little bit, probably. You're going to have a lot of Wii. Tim would burst through the wall and yell about some Wii game nobody ever played or cared about. You know what I mean? But I think you're on to something. I do think that's there. And I think it's, Nintendo adopting the indie strategy that they have. I think it's them putting out in year one a Zelda game, a Mario game, Mario Kart. I know there's an asterisk on that or whatever. But
and not just the ones you expect. Like every generation, you expect a Zelda or a Mario and maybe a Metroid and like the first party titles, but as you said, like there's so many, like the third parties are in now, and that's one thing that Nintendo has always struggled with since the days, probably I think like since 16-bit, that Nintendo had this reputation for. Yeah, there's a handful of like great Nintendo games, but like what else? Like there is a ton else now. There's a great indies.
Yeah,
We didn't even mention all the great indies that are out there right now.
Well, I mean, I think they're the lifeblood of the system.
Yeah,
I mean, it's what I talk about all the time. Is that this is the Vita's potential realized?
Just in the past couple of weeks, I picked up Gold Story and Stardew Valley, and I'm loving those. And we've got Odyssey a week away, which is obviously going to be the big game I suspect for the holiday season. And I mentioned to you just before the show, like this is the first time since the Switch came out that I've actually seen them available in stores. I think they're just now able to start catching up with demand. And they need to, because like you said, Christmas is coming. It's going to be a hot holiday.
It's going
gift.
To be the number one toy requested thing, a video game thing. Yeah, and that's what's crazy is think about the fact they've moved 2 million right now through just the hardcore people. This is, I don't think it can be overstated the fact that this is the best case scenario for the Switch, and it actually came to fruition.
Would in February, if someone had said to you, like, where do you think they'll be by first holiday, would you have imagined
2 million? This I wouldn't have imagined this, but what I always talked about back then was when people started poo-pooing it, right? Because it was like we all got
were
excited.
People poo-pooing it.
Remember, we got super hyped by the trailer. They put out that trailer, and we were like, "Oh my god, that looks awesome!" When everybody's on the rooftops, and it is what we wanted. It is a console hybrid.
Right.
And then it was they did that really awkward press conference from Japan. And everybody was
it's time to switch.
Yep, exactly. And like everybody's like, "What?"
I love it. But again, though, I love that they do that crazy stuff.
Sure, it was that thing of. That was for me the bellwether test, where they did the thing in January, I think it was, kindoffunny.com/year, maybe December, of the presentation, and it was poorly received, but it didn't dampen. Like, people were still stoked about it. People were still into it. People were interested in it. And what I said back then was, I'd like to buy Nintendo stock. And I feel like, for me personally, I have a weird thing with that in the way of what we do. Like, we're not media. Well, we are, but we aren't. Are we? Are we influencers? We're not press. We're not. I still hold the whole journalism and ethics and that. And I can't, in good conscience, buy stock in Nintendo and then talk about Nintendo games. And I can't do that. But I was like, I would if I was on the outside, and here we are.
I remember when I first saw that video and the press conference, and I was skeptical, to be honest. I remember thinking, oh, I mean, I love you, Nintendo, but like another weird oddity of a concept for a game console. Again, that's what I love about it. I said this before. The PlayStation and the Xbox, there's very little daylight between them. They're basically the same box, yeah, but with slightly different games and services. Nintendo's the only other option out there that is genuinely something different. So you always want to root for them because you want variety, you want choice. But I remember thinking, is this just like, especially after the Wii U was not successful, really doubling down on another tablet type thing?
To continue going off on this
but
road.
But I think the Wii U was like the weird experiment that they needed to undertake to get to the Switch, which is like the full realization of the handheld, you know, a real console that you can take anywhere.
Concept. Yeah, 100%.
And I think they're clearly reaping the benefits.
I can't
number
wait.
One seller.
It's so weird that the fact that it all happened the way we thought it would happen, where we were talking about predicting that they're going to launch it, the hardcore is going to get it, they're going to be happy with Zelda, and then I remember being like, maybe there'll be a few indies sprinkled in between that and ARMS and Splatoon and then Mario Kart and all that jazz, and I did that out of order, I know. But there's been so many overwhelming indies out there, so, and like this, the fact that you see these indies putting out these stories, like it's sold better on day one here than it has combined everywhere,
which
up
is
until
and that then there's a snowball effect, right? Because other indies see that and go, oh, it's viable. Yep. We can put out.
I don't think it's other indies, right? I think it's people like EA and Activision who are like,
up and down.
We fucking wrote this thing.
I mean,
off,
again, they're ports, but you're looking at Doom and Skyrim, and these big games are coming.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you remember in the age of like the Wii and the Wii U, we got Madden, we got Call of Duty, but it was like the shitty version that you didn't really want. Like,
and they're still struggling with that, right? Whereas like FIFA, people are not thrilled with FIFA.
Right.
And
I don't know what Doom's going to be like.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Skyrim. Like, what are the compromises going to be? Because clearly it doesn't have as much horsepower as the other systems. As an interesting qualification, I don't know if I'm reading too much, it says the top selling current generation console hardware. Does that mean that like the PS3 or something is still people are buying? Like,
people are still buying.
Why PS3. Do they need to? Why do they need to say? Why can't they just say the top selling console hardware? Is there something?
I think they want to make sure they're pointing out that they're not. I mean, I think it's interesting. I think they're quantifying or qualifying it because they don't want to mince words. They want to say that they're beating PS4 and Xbox One without saying PS4 or Xbox
One.
Yeah,
right.
I think that's it. I don't think they want people reading between the lines and be like, "Whoa, are they talking about PS3? What are they?"
So you think fairly confident in the prediction that the Switch will be the top selling console 100%. This holiday?
This is only going to the snowballs only get more out of control. Like that's the thing is like how many kids are putting on their Christmas list Switch that they saw at somebody's house?
Are they doing a Mario bundle? Do you think?
They are.
I mean, that would just be forget about it.
Yeah, it's not. I don't think it's a special edition. I think there's something special about it.
Does it have a little hat on it or something?
I think it comes with... No, it comes with the game code. No, it's not a special edition system. Maybe it has red Joy-Cons.
But you get... Look,
I think it might have red Joy-Cons.
But you get the game with it.
Kindoffunny.com/wrong.
Well, this is a perfect opportunity to get set straight.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, oh my God. Like, if you don't already have a Switch...
Yeah.
And you're in the market for something new, and there's the Switch with Mario bundled, you'll get
it.
And
how many people... And that's the thing. You imagine... We don't know. Super Mario Odyssey is going to come out, and I mean, the Edge score leaked, right? Or whatever, out of 10 out of 10. If it gets those kind of things... This is now when you get to that holiday season where gamers who were on the fence before look back and like, all right, the Switch has a library I do want to play. There are games on there. I want to play Zelda. I want to play Mario. I want to play Owlboy on the go. I want to play Konga Master Party, which you should be playing on your Switch right now. Because who doesn't love
it? I tried
it
last time I was on here.
All right, yeah.
Do you think, so do you really think this is going to pan out in the long term? It's almost inconceivable to imagine a world where like Nintendo is just flat out number one again.
No, I don't think they'll be number one. I don't think that's what this becomes, because the problem still remains that even today there was an article on GameSpot that almost made the rundown, or when we talk about it later, where they were asking somebody from EA about Battlefront 2 being on Switch.
Right.
And he's like, it's not something we're currently investing, but we're weighing all our options. And like,
but do you need those games to be number one? I mean,
I do. I think so.
You think so?
Yeah. I think because that's what makes it. I love my Switch. I do. And every time I'm on a plane, it's with me. And, we just played Mario Kart here this morning on the championship, but we were playing it yesterday and we're all super stoked for Mario and so on and so forth. When Smash comes out, it'll be a game changer. When I come home, I'm guaranteed to turn on my PlayStation 4.
But as we just said, like, so we know that over the holidays, Xbox and PlayStation are going to have Call of Duty World War II. It's going to have Star Wars Battlefront 2. It's going to have the big AAA experiences that either can't or won't go on the Switch.
Yeah.
But... Here we are. Switch still. We are saying that in spite of that, Switch is still going to be number one.
Yeah, but I mean for the holiday, and I think it's because the market's saturated, right? Like I don't.
You don't think it can become like the status quo going forward? Okay.
Do you?
I mean, it's hard to believe, isn't it? Because like it's been such a long time since Nintendo's been in this strong a position.
I think they could pull into the number two slot. I think they could pull past Xbox.
Well, I mean, there's a big gap, isn't there? Because PlayStation is outselling Xbox quite a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the X is really going to move the needle that much.
And that's the thing. The X is going to move to people who actually are like super in the 4K TV and want an HDR and all stuff.
That's a narrow band of
exactly.
gamers.
It's
that's
the same thing with Pro, right? Where the Pro didn't like set the world on fire, but it got to the people it needed to get to. And like my next PlayStation 4 will be a Pro, because why not? $100 more.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like that's not going to greatly increase either PlayStation or Xbox sales, whereas the Switch is still something.
But
that's,
I mean, all of the, you know, the market analysis and all the kind of the metrics and the wonky stuff aside, just what a great time to be in.
Oh my god,
games,
you
right?
kidding me?
I mean,
yeah, it's
such great stuff out there.
Yeah, exactly. It's exciting. Speaking of things that are out there, Gregway, number two. Nintendo Switch released a new firmware last night, or yesterday, actually, afternoon. I would usually save this for what's come out today and the thing, but I think it's newsworthy enough because it's something we've been bitching about so much that we literally bitched about it in the Gamescast yesterday we filmed.
And I was about to complain about it in the previous
We bitched about it in Gamescast, came off Gamescast, looked at our phones, like, oh,
I was
going to
say,
that.
I love Nintendo, but then sometimes they make it hard because they do these weird things.
Yep, they're
but it looks
done.
Like they're on, because I was going to complain about how like your saves still aren't in the cloud. Like if I lost my Switch, that's it. Like even if I bought a new Switch, like I can't just like my save games aren't, they're all locally on the console and nowhere else.
Well, still right now. So let me read the thing. Okay, firmware 4.0 is out right now. What it allows you to do is transfer saved game and user account data from one Switch to another.
Okay.
Both must be updated and connected to the internet, and the system being transferred to can't have more than 7 users. So it still doesn't fix cloud saves. If you lose your Switch on a plane,
but this
you're
is a step in the right direction.
100%, because this is the problem where I had my Switch when Jen moved in and she put her profile on there. It's like that thing where she's like, "Oh man, I really like this or like that." I'm like, "We should buy you a Switch," but she's like, "Well, my Zelda save is on your system and I can't get it off. Like, what's the point?"
I mean, I understand why Nintendo is so gun shy about a lot of the internet stuff, because yeah, it's a system that is, their brand is so like the kind of the Disney of video games,
family
and
friendly,
it's for kids.
Yeah.
They don't want kids, you know, being exposed to pervs and stuff online. I get it. And that's why that stuff is so locked down. But like cloud saves is pretty innocuous, right?
You think
why not?
So, yeah.
Why is that so hard?
Yeah. So this is a step in the right direction, like you're saying, though.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You can get users off of it. You can transfer saves off of it. So inevitably, when they start releasing these, well, that's an interesting one too. When they put out Switch 2.0, whatever that's going to look like, when they redesign the Switch like they do with like the 3DS, the 3DS Lite and 2DS and all that jazz, you can move it now. Holding the capture button also now capture, and this holding the capture button captures the last 30 seconds of video, which can then be trimmed and uploaded to Facebook and or Twitter.
Oh, that's cool.
Right now, it's only useful in Zelda, Mario Kart, ARMS, and Splatoon, but games going forward will be supporting it too. So hopefully that'll be pretty
easy. I like
that.
That's good.
And then, final one, when the Switch is docked now, you can use USB or wireless USB headphones. So
well,
you
can like actually that have that.
Yeah, that's a really good move. Yeah, yeah. So they're listening. It's there. Now where's Virtual Console?
What's wireless USB? Is that a thing?
USB, like it would be like, you know, you put the dongle.
So like, there's like a little dongle that goes in. Okay.
It's basically, have you ever seen this place?
Oh, no, I have wireless USB headphones on my PC, but I always think it's Bluetooth because I'm stupid. Mm. But yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah. So you plug in a little thing.
Yeah, like the PlayStation Gold
headphones. And the dongle is teeny tiny. You plug it in.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
Yep, I like that too.
And I see them adopting it. Good job, Nintendo.
That's great, because especially if you've got kids, like sometimes if I'm playing video games late at night, my kid's already gone to bed and you want to be able to play but not disturb people. It's great to have that.
Yeah.
We're in agreement.
I know. You ever let the kid play the Switch?
She loves it. Again, it's part of the reason why it's such a big hit in the house is my kid loves the Nintendo. She loves Puyo Puyo Tetris, Mario Kart, Splatoon, ARMS, and obviously Mario Odyssey. He loves Mario, so Odyssey is going to be the next big thing.
I can't wait for Odyssey.
She goes to the eShop or the news page and just watches the trailer over and over. She can't wait to play it.
What did she think of the musical? You show the musical commercial?
No, I've got it. I haven't seen it. Is the dance number?
Yeah, where it's live action dancers and then Mario dancing around with them.
I mean, it's funny. As much as people like started to get a bit weirded out by the idea of like Mario interacting with real humans, Nintendo are really doubling down on that.
They're like,
idea.
Get used to it.
It's like, get
it
used to it. Mario's in the real world now.
We got to do it.
He's here.
We're gonna
He's
break
in your
you
face.
This. He's living in your life. Number three and the final item on the Roper Report. EA has kind of commented on the Star Wars Battlefront 2 loot crates. This is via GameSpot. Here we go. Star Wars Battlefront 2's open beta ended last week after giving players the chance to try out the game's new weapons, maps, and heroes. However, much of the discussion surrounding the game is focused on its microtransactions, loot crates, and star cards. Battlefront 2 will give away things like maps and character DLC for free, but it will use a loot box style system for unlocking various upgrades, leading some fans of accusing the system to be pay to win. In an interview with GameSpot, EA said people's fears are understandable at the same time as calling the accusations hard to dodge. Offering his take on people's concerns, Chris Matthews, art director at EA Motive, the team behind Battlefront's campaign, said, quote, "Right now, there have been games that exploit players, and there have been games that have done it in better ways." DICE, the developer of Battlefront 2's multiplayer, has taken great care to make sure that star cards and the way they work give you more options in battle. Terms like pay to win and stuff like that are hard to dodge, but the guys are doing a really incredible job of trying to balance that system. The response is not annoying because we love the fans. We're gamers and we're trying to make something that's super compelling that everybody's going to enjoy, but you know, it's understandable. Then get ready for this one, because this blew me back today. Mitch Dyer.
Formerly of IGN.
Formerly of IGN, friend of the show. He's on often. One of the campaign's writers went on to say that DICE is listening to players' feedback. Quote, "The beta existed for things like this," he said. "To look at things like how are people responding to the balance and the maps and how everything flows. What are people enjoying and not enjoying? What's working? What's not working? We'll take all of that from the beta and start pumping it back into the game to improve it, because Battlefront 2 is a game that exists because of feedback from fans. Couch co-op, a single player campaign, these elements exist because people wanted them." I'm sorry, Mitch. Which I think, to DICE's credit, shows that they are listening and they do listen to feedback. When asked if they can envision a version of the game where the loot crate system is removed, Matthews was noncommittal, stating, quote, We're not really in a great position to talk about that. The guys at DICE would give you a great answer." That's part of my problem. This is, when I read it, I was like, oh man, oh, people are commenting on it. Excuse me. And then you jump in, and with all due respect, it's Chris and Mitch. And it's like, well, Chris, who I don't know, you know, he's the art director. All right, Mitch is the writer. Everybody's concerned about what's happening in the multiplayer section that they didn't have anything to do with, I'll say, but maybe a little bit to do with. They definitely didn't have like coding and systems and how the star cards and loot crates are going to work. It's also worth pointing out, if you missed Kind of Funny Games Daily last week, there's been a blog post about Battlefront 2, about the star cards, and saying that, hey, what you had isn't the final system. We're obviously going to tweak things and do things, but we left stuff out. So even that isn't exactly what we envision it to be. But Gary, are you terrified of the loot box and microtransaction invading your life?
Yes.
Okay, good.
That is the short answer. I do think it's a potentially troubling trend that, you know, people need to, you know, the gamers in the community and you know, people like you in the media need to stay on top of, because I think there is a potential slippery slope here.
100%.
And I see there was a lot of criticism of Forza 7,
yep,
loot box system. People really didn't like the way that was implemented.
Yeah.
And look, at the end of the day, these major companies, EA, Microsoft, whoever, the big companies, they're not patrons of the arts. Their function is to increase shareholder value, and they want to make money off of you. And they will do it, and they will bleed as much money out of you as they possibly can until you start to say, ow, that's enough, and you start to push back. Okay, there's the limit. That's how right. far we can push them. Yes, they're gamers, and yes, they love this stuff, but at the end of the day, the bean counters at the very, very top that are making... The reason why what these people are saying sounds very nice, but is ultimately kind of meaningless, is these aren't the people ultimately making
100%.
The decisions. This is
the fusion all the time, right? The developers are the people who are like, I'm in it for the art, I want to make the best game, I want to do this thing, and then it feels like it's the publisher who's coming in and being like, well, that's great, but how can we monetize that?
But we like money.
Yeah.
And again, they understand, of course, that... If you do something that's too exploitive, people will walk away, and then they make no money.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to find this sweet spot in the middle of, it's kind of like how casinos operate. Like, how do they keep you at the table?
Sure.
And there's all kinds of
no clocks, no windows.
Yeah, and they pump extra, you know, oxygen into the air conditioning to keep you awake, and all these different tricks that they use, and they deliberately, you know, ever notice when you book into a Las Vegas casino, okay, so how do I get to my room? Okay, well, you go through the casino, because yep. they want you to walk through. They want all that passing traffic.
Doesn't that crap table
It's all
fun?
Very brilliantly engineered to kind of to get every nickel out of you that they can. And, you know, you see, we've seen this now in a long time now in freemium, free-to-play games, microtransactions. Sure. It's bleeding into AAA now, and I don't know if it is a slippery slope, but I think that we are, as gamers, as community members, as people in the media, are right to be keeping a very careful eye on this.
Because, careful eye is the big part of it.
Yeah.
People, I think, want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, because like you've been on the show before. Literally every day now we talk about loot crates because something else happens.
It's the There's big some topic other story, right now,
and everybody's
right?
worried, and I get why they're worried. I find it so fascinating that it all came to a head this fall, where it literally was all these different publishers, developers all saw the cards on the table that people were into loot crates and boxes and started putting them in, and this is the year where it's like all exploding.
What's the biggest concern? Is it that people who are willing to spend tons of money buying all the good upgrades will have essentially an unfair advantage?
Pay to win's the big part. There's a lot, the facets of the argument I would think are pay to win. People don't want the playing field to be unbalanced.
Yeah.
It's losing stuff you already had access to that really is pissing people off.
In right.
The way that,
that's
like,
the thing. The stuff that you used to take for granted, now they're saying, but now you got to pay for that bit.
And that's where, like, we were talking about it yesterday, as we often do here. And I was bringing up, like, you know, think about when I played Spider-Man on PS1. And there was just so many costumes to unlock.
Right.
Now it would be, there'd be some to unlock, but then there'd be some to go buy. There'd definitely be a marketplace in there to go buy. And I say this talking about what this game would be. Insomniac Spider-Man from Sony first party, I'll be shocked if there's like a real microtransaction. Hey, welcome to the fucking PlayStation Store. Here's 19 costumes to buy. There's going to be some exclusive for sure. Probably one or two, I'll say. Pre-order bonuses as well. But it's not like that, but you can see where an Activision or EA or whoever is going to get in there and do this. And so right now it's that thing where people are planting their flag, putting down their foot and saying, we don't like these. We have to make sure they don't go wrong. They don't go awry.
So to play devil's advocate for a moment there, from the publisher's perspective.
Now, hold on. Do you mind if I stop you?
No,
because I think we have a devil's advocate in the chat here.
Oh, we
Jordan
do?
Wrote into kindoffunny.com/KFGD. We have devil's advocate, and then we have somebody yelling about devil's advocate.
Okay, so let's hear it.
Jordan writes in and says, what's up, kind of funny? I'm not an expert, but games are getting expensive, right? But they haven't risen in price since 360/PS3. So help me out. I haven't been following the microtransaction hullabaloo other than through Kind of Funny Games Daily. And as always, I don't understand the hostile reaction it's getting. EA earning $1.6 billion, while a large amount, isn't that staggering when it's broken down considering it includes microtransactions, DLC, seasons passes, etc. For instance, if Battlefield 1 has seen 21 million players online, then he puts a link in there, and on average, they spend an estimated $5. That's already $105 million just for one game. Throw in titles like Battlefront, FIFA, and Madden, and it's easy to see where the money comes from. This isn't a question per se, but if you had to choose between paying more for a base game or letting companies like EA and Rockstar supplement their earnings with other game content, what would you do? I've never paid for microtransactions myself, but I'm sure there's a game out there that deserves my money. Forgive me for being the devil's advocate. Haven't missed a show. Yours, Jordan. How would you rather it be, Gary? People want to make more money off of their games. Would you rather it be that, all right, cool, EA's Star Wars Battlefront 2, we're giving you this multiplayer mode, but the game overall, the whole package is going to cost you $90. But this includes all the DLC, and you get star card packs there. You don't have to go pay for, you don't have to microtransact, you don't have to roll for them, they're just included.
And publishers do already offer that with season passes, 100%. So you can just pay up front and get it all out of the way.
Yeah.
So that's fine. I mean, I know that when I look at like the games on mobile, when I look at, you know, iPhone games, I generally would prefer to just pay a price up front,
right,
than get it for free, but then suddenly everything's, you know, paid.
Here's
a
fucking ad,
because you end up paying more money. That over, you don't, the genius of it, of course, you don't notice. You think a dollar here, a dollar there. Mm-hmm. So sooner or later, you're talking, it adds up.
Yeah,
I had a stupid. There was like one of those clicker games that I bought on the. I got it for free on the iPhone.
Yeah,
and I you know, $5 here, $5 there, but you can go and look at like what you've paid, and you go, oh my god, I ended up spending like $100 on that game.
Yeah,
and that's why companies prefer that model, because you don't notice when it's done by little degrees like that, but over time you've ended up paying way more for the game than you would have done up front.
Do you feel crossed by that? Because I think this is the other argument, is when people write in and they're mad about loot boxes, because we've gone back and forth for a while, is it gambling, is it not gambling? One of the concerns is that it's preying on both children and then people who are prone to having gambling tendencies.
I don't like that it does tap into the, I think it does tap into the same parts of the brain that respond to gambling.
Yeah.
Right? That yeah. same kind of addictive, compulsive quality. And even when you're talking about purely just like the cosmetic stuff, you know, because the thrill of, I've thought about this a lot. Have you ever noticed, like, there's, I really believe, I don't know if anyone's written this article, somebody shirt or done this analysis. I think there's a whole art and science literally in just like the little kind of orgasmic euphoric moment you have like when a loot box opens. The animation, the sound, the loot box kind of like rattles and like boom, and you go ooh, and you get this little endorphin rush.
Oh sure, totally.
And there's a science into like all of that, and like how do you get people to go, oh, it's so satisfying to open those boxes, I must open another one.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous, I think, because again it's I do think it's the same kind of thing that the same neurons are firing than in the mind of a compulsive gambler, I think.
Sure.
Again, from the devil's advocate point of view, like you said, games are becoming more expensive. The price has been static now for what, 10 years? Games have been $60 for a long time now.
Yeah.
And you know, and that, so they haven't even increased with the price of inflation. There's certainly the development costs are going up because as the games get more, as the systems become more powerful, it's going to be more expensive to make games in 4K than it was at 720. It just is.
Well, the bigger thing too, right, is like how it's expensive to make the games because they take longer to make, and now you're making fewer games.
Right.
Where it used to be, these studios are pumping out a game every 2 years, a year and a half sometimes. Yep. And now it is like Naughty Dog's off the grid for a long time, and you break into two teams and you're trying to alternate, but there's still these dead periods where you're not coasting on the sales of this, and that's why you put a multiplayer mode in there and you put microtransactions and you sell hats and shit.
And again, there's no way to win. People are always going to react negatively. If EA came out tomorrow and said, you know what, we heard you were not doing microtransactions anymore, but games are just now $80.
Yeah.
We've got to make our money, otherwise we can't make games anymore. The numbers don't add up. People would complain about that too. So it's, you know, pick your poison. But I do think that this ultimately is... There's a reason why they've not done that, and they've done this instead, because they think they have calculated at the very top kind of boardroom level. They've figured out that there's more money to be made this way, because you don't notice it when you're spending money by little degrees. And again, it's the same thing. How do you keep the gambler at the table? It's not good enough anymore to get your $60, but then that's the last the company ever sees of you for the lifespan of that game. They want to find out what's the long tail of the game. How can we continue to keep bleeding you dry over time with loot boxes, with extra content? And again, you should pay for content. Content can't always be free.
Yeah.
Again, this is a business. It's not a charity, but you have to find something in the middle where the company, the shareholders are happy, and the gamers are happy as well. And that's I don't envy the people that have to make these decisions. That's a tightrope you gotta walk.
Did you see this patent within the last this week?
The Activision thing.
Yep. We talked about that yesterday, right? And
that, I think, is a little bit insidious.
Yeah. We talked about it. I felt like the second half of the patent was, and the first part I was like, okay. But it's also, it can be used either way. But we were doing the thing of like, well, from Activision's perspective, blah, blah, and a guy wrote it to me on Twitter today and was like, you're fucking defending Activision on this? Like, you're fucking full of shit or whatever. And it was like, well, no, I'm trying to explain why this is happening. I feel like we get so torn apart in the fact of like, EA's bleeding you dry, but you should pay for content. But we keep vacillating on the scale of this, where there's got to be a medium where these people are
like
making money.
Like I said, there are two sides of it, and somewhere there's, you know, the exploitation, and then there's, okay, we're going out of business because we tried to do the best thing for gamers, but we realize there's no money in it. Somewhere in the middle, there is a very narrow band where the shareholders and the gamers can both be happy, and we're in the process now of figuring out where that is. And sometimes we'll overshoot, the EA will get it wrong, or Activision or whoever will be too generous or not generous enough. And like, okay, you keep correcting. And over the course of time, hopefully we find that sweet spot. But again, the bad version of it is the slippery slope where we're paying a lot more for games and we don't even notice we're doing it because we're doing it by
chipping away. Drip. Matthew Anderson writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD. And wants to piggyback off that comment, Gary. Have you heard of Icarus? The guy that flew too close to the sun and burned his wings and fell. Well, I feel the video game industry has not, because they are seeing the revenue coming in from microtransactions, and they cannot get enough. They eventually are going to get too close to the sun, microtransaction revenue, and kill off their avid fans. I, for one, am fed up, and I am not purchasing games that are so heavily influenced by microtransactions. If the microtransaction narrative does not change, then video games are going to suffer. Yeah, the whales will keep the companies afloat, but at what cost? The non-whales, having such a disadvantage, will stop playing the games online, and then it's only an environment where whales exist to play online. There are not enough whales to keep ecosystems going, so matchmaking times will increase until even they are pissed off and they will leave. This has to change, because these greedy, money-hungry executives are ruining a great community that just wants to play games and not feel like they have a salesman at their door every 10 minutes of gameplay. Learn the lesson that Icarus taught us. Jeez! Thoughts? Matthew.
Icarus is always it's applicable to so many situations.
Of course,
the Icarus parable. And yes, you know, it's actually a good point. I had not considered that. Is that, you know, one of the things that we know is true is that in the microtransaction kind of mobile world.
Yeah.
And this is, I believe, it's true in casinos as well. Is that like 90% of the money that comes in comes from like 5% of the players, the whales,
exactly.
The guys that spend big money.
Yeah.
And maybe so this is like the dark dystopian vision of the video gaming future is that. Only a handful of whales can afford to play the games, but they're willing to do it, and everyone else feels like they've been frozen out. And you're right, matchmaking times would go up, right? Because suddenly it's harder to find people to sure. play with.
My thing is, and I mean, I'm not trying to even be best case scenario, that I don't think that will happen. If there's one thing the video game industry is, it's reactive. That's what I keep talking about with this, is like, EA and Activision and every other publisher and developer sees what's happening right now, that people are freaking out about this. And I know I keep saying, if you're an avid listener, I'm sorry, but next year when Ronnie 2K goes out to talk about NBA 2K19, everyone's going to ask him about the virtual currency and the microtransaction and the loop. And they'll be like, here's our solution. Here's how we listen to fans. Here's what we dialed back or did or changed this way.
Yeah, I think all the publishers are aware that this is potentially a very toxic subject right now. If they don't get this right, it could the backlash could hit them very hard. So I don't necessarily think the worst case scenario is going to happen. I'm not expecting like the dystopian version of this where like only the 1% can play video games and the rest of us are kind of huddled around the oil barrel.
Yeah.
Like,
you know?
Playing like 10-year-old games because that's all we can afford anymore. But I think we're trying to, you know, the world is changing, the models are changing, the economics are changing, and companies have to adapt and try to find that narrow path through the middle where everyone is satisfied, and it's not easy.
And it's also the thing you're talking about, the huddling around the fire, right? Like, don't forget that, like, there's dozens and hundreds of indie studios that aren't doing this, that aren't microtransaction, that are making games like Cuphead and are putting them out and being like, here's our game, and you're not getting it. I mean, support those, play those. Like, if you get driven away from this, go find another game that doesn't do that to you and does what you want.
What else you got?
We weren't even in reader mail yet.
Oh, okay.
That was just us, you know, it's a conversational podcast, you know, you piggyback off that. Now, we're going to jump to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday. Do, 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 yeah. Out today, you can finally do the Leviathan Prestige Rage
might be right.
Rage in Destiny 2. Party Golf is on the Switch. Spelunker Party is on Switch. Judge is on Switch. Elliot Quest is on Switch. The Count Lucanor is on Switch. Jackbox Party Pack 4 is on Switch.
I'm sensing a pattern here.
It's Switch Day.
Switch, 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 Switch.
Bomber Crew is on PC. Life is Strange Before the Storm Episode 2 is on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. Can't wait to get home and play it. Opus Magnum is on PC. Revenant Saga is on Switch. Robo Army is on Switch. Super Ping Pong Trick Shot is on Switch. Think of the Children has been released on PC. This is a game I played back at RTX Sydney. Fell in love with it. Think it's awesome. The developers were nice enough to put Kinda Funny in the game. If you get this one, use the word Kinda Funny. You can unlock all the characters here. You got me, Tim, Nick, Kevin, Joey, Cool Greg. They're all there, ready to be played with. You're familiar with this game?
No.
It's a co-op one where you got to keep all these dumb kids alive and they want to keep killing themselves.
Like, is it like Lemmings or something?
It's like you're at a playground, right? And they'll run into the street or they'll start drowning or they'll jump. Like, they're going to fly off the swing. You got to run over and stop them.
That sounds great. I got to look into that.
It's really good, yeah.
Is that going to be PC only or is it going on console?
Right now, it's only PC. They're a small team. I'm not sure what their plans are for bringing it over. And then there's a Lawbreakers update out right now that gives competitive ranked mode, boss leagues, as well as a number of additional content updates, including all new maps, balance adjustments, new customizations, multi-region queuing, and much, much more, according to Boss Key Studios. So go to get that. Give them a shot. Lawbreakers trying. They're out there hustling.
So again, I don't know if this is indicative, but like, it's just all Switch. There's literally one title on here that's on PS4 and Xbox One.
But Thursday's Switch Day. That's like when similar to how like PlayStation, well, I guess that's a bad example. PlayStation's updates on Tuesday.
Most games come out on Tuesday, right?
Yeah, box copies come out on Tuesday, but for the and all their eShop stuff, they put it on Thursday.
I mean, there's a bunch of stuff here I want to check out. Party Golf sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Bomber Crew. I like the sound of this.
Yeah. Okay. And then new dates for you. Another Switch game for you. Batman from Telltale Season 1 is coming to Switch on November 14th in North America, November 17th in Europe and Australia. You've worked with those Telltale folks.
Yeah, I actually, I was talking to some of the Telltale guys the other day. I was asking them if they're going to be supporting Switch, and they said, you know, they're looking at it. I think, you know, obviously they've got a vast catalog of games.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'd love to see Game of Thrones and Walking Dead and, you know, Minecraft Story Mode and all that stuff should come to the Switch.
Yeah. Agreed. And then from Cameron, who wrote in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD. On Tuesday's show, during new releases, you mentioned Summon Night 6 for PlayStation 4 and Vita. This is wrong. Summon Night 6 has been delayed numerous times. It is now releasing on Halloween, October 31st in North America and later in Europe. Thank you, Cameron. I will believe it when I see it then, if Summon Night 6 actually comes out on the motherfucking October 31st if they keep delaying it. I ain't falling for it again. Kevin, put Summon Night on the list. We don't trust them. We don't trust them, Kevin. Thank you. Now we're going to jump into reader mail. Mail call. Remember, if you want to be part of the show, kindoffunny.com/KFGD. Just like Golden Phoenix did, who had a two-part write-in. Number one, a you're wrong. Number two, a question about microtransactions. I cut the microtransactions question. We covered it with everything we've been talking about. But, very importantly, Golden Phoenix writes in and says, what's up, Greg and Gary? Just wanted to send in a small but important you're wrong from yesterday's show. In yesterday's show, you, Greg, read a letter from a best friend of Arabic Muslim descent asking about stereotypes in South Park. When reading and answering, you pronounced Arab Arab as Arab. From what I understand, that is considered to be a derogatory pronunciation similar to the use of Oriental for Asian descent, people of Asian descent. The correct pronunciation is Arab. I don't want you to fall into the same trap you did with gay, so I wanted to throw that out there.
What was the trap you fell into with gay?
A little bit apples and oranges, because... So the trap I fell into with gay, I always talk on the show, right? Is that I feel like we're lucky enough to have a vast audience, and I know we have young folks in the audience, or I know we have people who live in their towns and never left, or blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I always talk about how when I went to college, I got there and it was very much like, I didn't like something, it was stupid. Oh, that's gay. You know, right. Blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't, that's homosexual. It's just, that's dumb. That's a bubble, you know, how you talk in high school when you're a dumb kid.
Right.
And I didn't realize anything was really wrong with that until right. My gay friend was like, what did you say?
Yeah.
Why do you mean that? What do you, in a, like, yeah. And not in a, I know you're a bigot, like, because I wasn't, obviously, and still, I'm still not, I'd like to think, except against Kevin. But it was that thing of like, hey, let's have a real conversation and talk you down. So we are, our big thing with Kind of Funny, obviously, when we tell stories like that from our youth, and especially in the climate we're in, right, is like, learn from our mistakes. Like, we can help you if you haven't had that, if you've never met a gay person, to say, why are you saying that? Why are you using that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the great, you know, you do have a huge audience and a lot of young people out there. And if you can educate them that it's not cool to say stuff like that, so gay, in a derogatory yeah. way, then that's a public service.
So to swerve back, though, on the road from yesterday's show, I am very much with you, Golden Phoenix. I had breezed through the question. I knew where we were going to get to the end about South Park and Muslims. I'm like, okay, cool. I hadn't read where it said Arab. And so when that popped up and I saw it and I was like, Arab, like my first thought, I was like, I'm like, and I'm not up on fucking ways to insult people's race. So I was like, isn't that like an offensive way? And so I said it and like waited and nobody said anything. I was like, all right, I guess I'm wrong. And it was, I shit you not, I thought about it all day. Well, for off and on as we were working, but I was laying in bed last night and I was like, fuck, Arab. Why Arab is what I'm supposed to say. Why did I? It was just a pronunciation faux pas. But thank you for pointing out. And yeah, everybody, I wanted to bring it up myself. I'm glad you did. I'm just like, huh. And I was surprised, honestly. More people didn't write in about it. Because I thought
it's good that you thought about it.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, I don't know. That's the whole point. The whole point of watching anything Kind of Funny does is that you're here to have fun with us and talk about the things you love. Not to have some
never the expense
jughead
of
from Midwest yeah coming absolutely. Up and being like, well, I don't know what you are. So yes, Arab. Not Arab, which is not, I think, not good. I'm clearly not good. Somebody wrote in. Nobody says that. Arab. Next question. Kristen, how do you pronounce that? Cristiano Ronaldo.
I very much doubt the Cristiano Ronaldo, who also signed himself CR7. So this is the this is clearly meant to be the Cristiano Ronaldo who plays for Real Madrid, one of the world's greatest soccer players.
Okay,
I doubt that's him.
What do you mean you doubt it? He could be here wanting to learn about video games.
Do you think he watches? Do you think Cristiano Ronaldo watches?
He's working out, right? He's got to be listening to something.
Like he's got the podcast in his
yeah.
In his
he's got his little like AirPods in there.
At the Bernabeu.
CR7 writes in and says, hey guys, so apparently, according to Jason Schreier, Visceral's closing was mainly due to it being kind of a train wreck, like it was hypothesized on yesterday's episode. Of course, we're talking about Battlefront 2. It got closed down. We got surprised by it two shows ago. Then we talked more about it yesterday. What was the reasoning behind it? Is it this game's a service business? Is it that the game was off track? Jason is the one who broke it, obviously, on Kotaku. And then, yes, he did follow up. If you missed it, what happened is, yesterday, people are talking about this, obviously, as they have. Jason Schreier tweeted out, I feel like I should clarify that despite today's hot takes, Visceral's game was not canned because it was single player, parentheses, from what I've heard. A man named Andrew responded, so the EA exec making a weird statement then? Why? Because if you remember, the EA guy was like, nah, it's not where we want to go. We want to go in a different direction. We're sending it away and doing all this stuff. Jason responded, because investors don't like hearing the project was a mess. Back to CR7. This means two things. Jason already has some kind of info/scoop. Yes. But it also means EA were a bit misleading in their statement. Why is this? Why risk getting pissed on instead of saying the truth that the project was a mess? Where are Mbongos, CR7? So, for me, if I'm EA, you're asking me why risk getting pissed on instead of saying the truth that the project was a mess? Because that's an asshole thing to say. That is totally throwing an entire studio under the bus. That is painting with a broad brush of like, hey, these guys don't know what they're doing. That's fucking up their careers. That's fucking up public perception. That's a bad look for the company. Not to mention that EA is literally Batman at the end of The Dark Knight. They're already voted the worst company in the world all the time. Give it to us. We can take it. We can take everybody lamenting that single player games are dead, blaming us for only wanting money. Like, we don't want to be those people. And I don't really believe the people running EA are those people. I think, you know what I mean? Like Yarny and Peter Moore and Gamers First, like they've talked a good talk for a long time. And I do think that most of their games show that. I think it was just that this is how it's got to be. This is the proper way to do business. Let's not air our dirty laundry and attack people.
You know, it's like you said, when you said just a moment ago, if I were EA, would you really want that job? What a thankless job. Mm-hmm. And again, it's easy to villainize. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be on the side of like, you know, sympathizing with the big, rich, you know, corporate executives. But again, I think it's a bit of a poison chalice. Like you can't do right.
Yeah.
Everything you do is going to get criticized from some quarter.
100%. And that's the problem in quotes with it is the fact that like, why do we hate EA? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what's the real reason? Because they're incredibly successful and they put out sports games every year, but then they also put out things like Yarny. They also put out, they're working on No Way Out or making No Way Out come out.
I think it's because of the perception that, and how accurate this is debatable, but it's the perception that the big corporations are not on your side. Mm-hmm. They are in the business of pleasing you and delivering you joy and entertainment and making you happy, so long as that results in you giving them money.
Yeah.
And no further than that. That's it. They're not, again, they're not a charity. They're not a patron of the arts. They're not here to make, it's not their purpose on earth to make you happy. It's their purpose to make shareholders happy. And if they can make shareholders happy by making you happy, that is a means to an end, but it is not the end. It's not what they're here to do.
And it's for the, I mean, if you want to hate them or, and I don't even mean them EA, I mean EA, Activision, Ubisoft, right? You're hating a necessary evil. Like, these guys get you those big budget games. They do these big budget things. And I'm not saying that can't happen without a giant publisher. Obviously, there's success stories outside of it. But you look at an indie game and there's a difference between what Cappy's doing, right? Versus what EA's doing with Battlefront. Like that, I don't know how you would go and make that game somewhere else. And granted, you could have Disney throwing money around, but talk about scaling up size, like server infrastructure, the way all these things you take for granted that
it's easier to keep it real the smaller you are, right? And yeah, the larger you get, and certainly after you go public and you have investors and shareholders and a board of directors to keep happy, that is, you know, like you said, an infrastructure and costs and this machine, it becomes a harder and harder balancing act. I do think that aside from the vast amounts of remuneration and stock options and big houses and corporate jets, all that's very nice.
Yeah.
But it's largely a thankless task otherwise.
Yeah, especially when you get to the top. But this is always the fucking thing that drives me crazy the most. And this is totally me coming probably with a chip on my shoulder from IGN, is that the people you're talking about with their houses and stock options and stuff at the top of the thing, with all due respect to them, I doubt they give a flying fuck what anyone on the internet says about them, right? They're not dialed into Twitter and NeoGaf and Reddit, and they're just doing their life, living their job. I'm the CEO, the CFO, the whatever. Like, are we making it? Are we doing this? Are we, blah, blah, blah. And that's where it gets weird.
Well, they're not, I mean, again, yeah, they're not obsessing about like the Reddit posts, but they are certainly hearing it. It's coming up. It's in the air supply. It's coming up through the chain.
Sure.
I guarantee you, like the heads of EA and Activision right now are aware of the fact that there is concern
sure
among gamers about loot boxes and the destinification of video games.
And that's
and
good.
They have to be aware of it because they know if we piss these people off, they might stop giving us their money. And again, that's all it comes down to.
But that, that's like such a clinical way of looking at it, which is needed, I think, when you get to the top. It is when you get to the point that, hey, I work at EA, or I'm a developer, or I'm in accounting at EA, right? And you have people talking shit about this company, because that's how it was at IGN for the longest time. And still is if you want to go find it. But it's like being at IGN, and I was so fucking proud to work at IGN. I was so proud of my IGN bag or my shirt or whatever. And having like people at like PAX or whatever like scoff at you or whatever. Like, you know, it's like, or like just going to Reddit, GAF, whatever, insert it. And it's just like, oh, well, they're sellouts anyway. They can't spell ignorant without IGN. They're all bought and paid for. And it's just like, what are you fucking talking about? We're all gamers. We're all trying to do awesome stuff, but it's then a business decision made up the chain or this, that, or the other. That isn't even that bad. I don't think there's anything horrible that ever happened at IGN. But like, it's the same thing here where it's just like, never. Obviously, Jason Schreier already has stuff going. We'll never have an official statement, right, of what happened at Visceral. But there's more to the story than we wanted to go into games and services, or this thing was a complete
And I think part of the reason why this has blown up and has become such a big story, you know, Patrick Klepek wrote a great piece about this, about how he interpreted the statement as this is the beginning of games turning into loot boxes and carrot and stick and grind progression and, you know, stories going away. I don't know if that's true. I think that it's one possible take, and there are many others. And the reason why there are so many is the official statements that, again, you're never going to get a frank statement from these guys. Again, it's not in their interest to tell you the truth about what's going on. I'm not saying the truth is any better or worse than what we're looking at right now, but they're never going to say, look, the reality is this. They are going to put forward a statement that serves their interests
and protect
their shareholders. And that's why you end up with this kind of meaningless word salad where you go, you listen to it, you go, okay, I heard you talking for like a minute there, but I have no idea what you just said. Like,
right.
You're talking about like pivot and the market, shifting marketplace, and like, but what does that actually, I have no idea what any of that means.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's created this big, it's maybe counterproductive in a way, because now it's created this massive conversation as people are trying to interpret what the hell happened as opposed to just understanding what has happened.
And of course, the problem is that this is one of the biggest games like people were excited for. It's Star Wars.
It's
right?
Depressing.
You know how big Star Wars
is. It's depressing because, you know, if you can't make a great, good old-fashioned, epic story adventure type game in the Star Wars universe, where the hell can you do it anymore, right? I mean, Star Wars is one of the great audience magnets. Like, people are ready to come and play a Star Wars game, and if for whatever reason they have decided that's no longer viable, then yes, there's a reason why many people now in the media, in the community, are talking about what does this mean for the wider picture, and it is very disquieting.
Yeah, are you worried about it? Are you worried about single player games stories?
No, not in the long run. I think that there'll always be a place for it.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that, again, if you just look at the viability of the economics and everything, it's expensive to build a story campaign.
Sure.
And when you look at how much it costs versus what's the return on that, you know, even a really good campaign in a story-based game is what, 10 hours, 10, 12 hours?
Yeah, I feel like an Uncharted
And you're probably going to play it once and maybe never again.
Yeah.
And that, you know, then you're into the multiplayer side. And so, you know, maybe let's say it costs $100 million to build the story campaign that you're done with in 10 hours, never go back to again. And it costs another $100 million to build the multiplayer world, which you can play for hundreds of hours, you know, potentially endlessly. What seems like the smarter part of that investment?
Of course.
And so I understand why, you know, it's a little bit worrying. But I do think that, you know, companies like Square and Telltale and Naughty Dog will continue to, you know, those are companies that are, it's fundamental to their DNA that story and narrative and kind of emotional investment are part of, you know, if you take that out of their DNA, there's nothing left. And so I don't know what's going to happen here. I do think it's something that's got extra publicity because it's Star Wars and because it was something that was so highly anticipated. Everyone's just ultimately, you know, what it depends on like what it means. That's for another, I think it's almost like for another day. Right now, everyone's just sad
that
we're not going to get to play this game. We all wanted to play it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I think that there's always going to be people making single player stuff. And I actually, that's why I kind of like the games as services model, where it is like, all right, cool. It's Destiny. It's Friday the 13th. It's whatever. It's a game I can return to over and over again and then take a break from to go play South Park and then come back to that. And then, oh, Mario Odyssey's here. I'll play that for a long time. And then, okay, you keep coming back. And that's like filling in the gaps when even there's not an indie game I don't want to play. Because it's the same argument that used to be of like how indies and AAA worked. When AA fell away, when THQ fell, and nobody was really making that mid-section, mid-tier game anymore,
yeah.
It became you either had your big blockbuster or you had your little indie. And like the indies were coming out so often that you were able to pop in, that's what you were playing. Probably more if you combined all the indies together versus all the AAA.
I mean, I do kind of hope that they continue to keep like the curated single player experience there. I mean, when I first played Destiny 2, I was in the middle of like what I thought was a single player mission, and some other rando shows up like, oh wait, you're here? Like, I guess you're doing this mission as well.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool. But like sometimes I just want to be left alone and do stuff by myself. And maybe that's old fashioned and maybe that's a dinosaur way of looking at playing games
that's
going away. But like sometimes I just want to play the game, be left alone and play the game by myself. I don't want some other dude showing up and helping me out.
Son of a bitch, that other dude. Gary, final question.
Yeah.
Comes from Vitz Patel. Good morning, Greg and Gary. Greetings from the UK.
Oh, great.
With the signs showing that traditional single-player linear experiences are going away, which game would you like to write before it all becomes games as services, Gary? Also, happy Diwalia to all the best friends celebrating. Diwali, not Diwalia.
I'm going
to
sound very... I've heard of it, but I don't know what Diwali is.
If I'm right... Kevin, give me a Google search on Diwali, because I think I know it from The Office, right? Wasn't it... Kelly celebrated. So is Hindu? D-I? Hindu. What is it? Here we go. Diwali's popping up. It's the Festival of Lights. Yes. Wait. Yes, that's
Hindu
how I know
Festival
it.
Of Lights, one of India's biggest festivals. That sounds great.
Yeah. It's a religious celebration. Here we go. Diwalia is the Hindu Festival of Lights, celebrated every year in autumn in the Northern Hemisphere. It is an official holiday of Fiji. Oh, a whole bunch of places. It spiritually signifies the victory of light over darkness, good over evil, knowledge over ignorance, and hope over despair. That's the kind of holiday I can get behind.
I want to see what people actually do. Okay, before Diwali night, people clean, renovate, and decorate their homes and offices. On Diwali night, people dress up in new clothes or their best outfits, light up lamps and candles inside and outside their home, participate in family prayers, and then a family feast, including sweets and an exchange of gifts between family. It sounds great. Why we should get in on this. Are we allowed to have... Can we do it?
Or I mean, it's a religious ceremony, or it's a religious...
Would we have to convert, or could we just, like,
in the office, they didn't convert. They just went and did it. And this is also a huge shout-out to The Office for teaching me about someone else's culture, which I appreciate quite a bit.
Yeah.
Michael Scott song. Everybody go watch that episode tonight. Netflix. Is it still on Netflix, Kev? The Office? Thanks, Kev. Everybody should watch Dwight.
There's an episode of The Office where he gets in on...
Yeah, well, they all... I'm pretty sure, like... Well, not all of them, but a lot of them go to the Diwali celebration, yeah. And he takes the Adam Sandler Hanukkah song and makes it about Diwali.
Oh, because that's also a festival of lights.
Yeah, exactly. It's good. It's a really good episode. Watch it tonight.
I'm going to check it out.
All right, cool. All right. Here we go.
He's already
there
found
it.
What's the episode called?
No, I'm looking at it.
Kevin's on it. He's MacGyvering over there. What game do you want to write? I think we asked you this last time before.
I don't know what universe
you want to get into? What do you want to play? When are you making my... Go to Telltale. Tell them you're here to write the Superman game. Greg's going to be your story consultant. Let's go. I'm Greg.
You've stumped me.
Okay.
I do like...
Well, I always feel it's a weird question for you, because like you wrote a Star Wars movie.
I've got to do some of the cool ones.
Anything can happen.
Wars
Literally anything can happen.
Walking
now.
Dead. I've got to do some cool stuff already, but definitely, I mean, I do like... I'm a big fan of Superman, as are you.
Yeah.
I know we have different interpretations of where Superman's currently at.
Like, well, I mean, I just take it on the chin. I'm like, all right, whatever. I gotta just watch these movies. It's how it is. It's not what I want, but it's what it is. Season 3, episode 6 is Diwali.
And it's called Diwali.
When
Kelly
invites the staff to attend a Hindu festival, Michael takes the opportunity to bring everyone closer, and, well, Kevin clicked on Punisher. You clicked on the Punisher, Kevin!
Oh, wait, is the Punisher out?
No, November 17th,
I think. It's an upcoming thing. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to add that to
my list. It's fine. Diwali's on there. We said it earlier.
Mass Effect?
Oh, yeah?
I mean, I don't know if that... It might be done.
You could be the man to reboot it.
It might be done, right? Yeah. I don't know. Andromeda was
definitely on the shelf for a while.
It's not what the series needed to justify its existence. But I've always loved that universe. So the very rich universe, Mass Effect. Love it.
Okay. Mass Effect, there it is. Everybody writes about it.
So somebody's reminding you that there's a Mass Effect theme park ride here at Great America down in the South Bay. I want to go do it. There's like a whole ride, a Mass Effect ride.
I don't do that stuff. I don't do rides.
Are you not a theme park guy?
No.
Really?
No. I get car sick, man.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, I get motion sick real easy, and I don't like that.
Oh, what a shame, because otherwise, like, it seems like it'd be right up your street.
Great America in the burbs of Chicago, Six Flags Great America. When we had to go there, I didn't want to do any of the rides, but they had a DC Comics town. I was so happy.
Yeah, I just got
to walk around. And this is before, like, now you say, oh, there's DC Comics stuff to buy everywhere. There wasn't when I was growing up, man. So I just walked around, looked at standees, bought Green Lantern glasses. It was great. Like cups, not like glasses. I'd buy those too, though, if you're listening in DC. No one to squad up with today. No, I didn't see anybody either. Remember, write into kindoffunny.com/KFGD. I need your name, your username, platform of choice, and why you need people to play with. I read them here. Friends find you. But today it was all real questions about microtransactions and stuff. So good there. I'll give you one new segment, Gary.
New segment?
Yeah. I throw these in there. I say new segment, and then I do it one time and never
you
come back to it.
Throw me a curveball.
No, it's not even a question.
Okay.
Steve Lewis wrote in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and wants to lament GT Sport. Hi, Greg. Hi, Gary. I know that nobody at Kinda Funny is a racing game enthusiast, so there won't be any coverage of Gran Turismo Sport or how big of a letdown it is from you guys. Real quick, Kevin loves racing games. I sent him the code for GT Sport, but I never heard if he's going to do anything with it. You going to play it?
I think I'm going to take the cart, the sled to my house.
Your house is not big.
I know.
Okay, all right.
Don't tell Paula.
I won't tell Paula. She'll see it, pretty obviously. This is a game I've been waiting for since I got my PlayStation 4, yet am sadly extremely disappointed with it. This isn't your traditional GT game. There is no single-player career slash campaign as it is in previous GT titles. This is essentially an online-focused esports GT game with bare-bones offline modes that amount to nothing more than challenges in single races that just aren't enough to keep an offline player like myself coming back. That, along with the severely cut-back car slash track list, leaves me this feeling more like a prologue version than a full release, and that's a shame in terms of the driving physics. GT Sport is the best of the series. As a fan of Gran Turismo and a fan as and let me try again. As a fan of Gran Turismo, as a fan of offline slash career, no, offline career slash campaign driven games, I am concerned with the trend towards online games as services, with GT Sport being the most recent casualty.
Well, I mean, this is what we were just talking about all over again, isn't it? This is another example of the curated single player experience going away, and now everything's live. Everything's online.
Yeah, you followed this, right? That, like, if you're not connected online, you can't, like, progress in your career or do anything. Like, you can only
I mean, who isn't connected online at this point? But still, that might not be the way I want to play the game. And I mean, so is the verdict in? Is this the consensus? The GT Sport is a thumbs down. People are not. I know Gersman didn't like it.
Yeah, no. I mean, what we've reported on this show before, the fact that, like, they had you have to be connected. It's extremely limited offline, and then Steve here is the first person to write in with an opinion on it, because yeah, we're not really racing guys.
Is this considered a is this like the next Gran Turismo, or is it just like a little side project?
No, this is a real Gran Turismo,
and this is what they've said.
No, their problem with the online business is that they are tied into this esports league thing, and they wanted it to be connected so they could use their servers and cloud saves and all that crap. So it'd be like above the board, and like whatever. If you post a time there, you know it's official.
Right.
Whatever. Don't play racing games. You know?
I feel like for one of the pillars of the play, you know, it comes down to the handful of games right on each platform between Xbox and PlayStation make the difference. Which way do you go? And Gran Turismo has always been one of the pillars of
for Sony. PlayStation, yeah.
And it's I don't know. I haven't really tracked it super closely, but it kind of feels like it's been kind of mismanaged.
It's waned for sure, because it was like the top selling game for the longest time for PlayStation. And then like other people just came along, like Forza came along.
Forza
and stole
is basically taking
Project Cars has fans
lunch,
behind
right?
it now. Yeah, exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're watching us live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, your job is to keep us honest by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. You tell us what we screwed up as we screw it up. Then at the end of the show, like right now, we read through it and correct.
So I'm guessing we didn't pitch a perfect game, right? We've got
Well, you know, it's that thing where you said that. So like, I can already see people are here. Yeah. No, they're trying to see. We got some editorializing from Ignacio as usual.
I don't want to hear a different opinion. I only want to hear if like factually we got something wrong.
I know.
I feel like we must have, because there was a lot. Going out on a limb.
Here we go. Okay, let's see. Zyger isn't saying we're wrong, but he's expanding.
Okay,
the Super Mario Odyssey Switch bundle includes a download code with the game, a download code for the game. I think he means you're wrong, Zyger. Mario themed red Joy Cons, as well as a Switch carrying case, which is exclusive to the bundle. The Switch bundle does cost $380. $80 more than the retail one. Red Joy-Cons are being sold separately, but they come bundled. I'm going to buy those for sure.
You're saving a lot. It's not exactly a bargain, is it? I mean, that's basically, if you bought those all separately, that's basically what you'd be
paying.
You
think it would
have,
well, they charge
you
an arm and a leg.
It's not even
the
physical cartridge. It's just a download code?
Huh? Yeah, no, you don't get the cartridge. You get the download code. That's what it is now. People are, yeah, I know. Don't get mad.
So we weren't wrong. We just said we didn't know, and they've provided the information. Red Joy-Cons.
Yeah, I said that. Zygarde's just expanding. I don't count that.
They should make the Joy the thumbsticks yellow, so they look like the little buttons on his
exactly.
His overalls.
Yeah, exactly. See, or his nips. You seen him shirtless?
Because he's got nips now. All right, yeah.
Schnittner writes in and says, Forza 7 doesn't have microtransactions. It only has loot crates to get rid of your in-game credits. Most of the media got that just wrong. If you say it often enough, it doesn't make it true. Love the show. Never missed one. Greetings from Germany.
Okay, I think that's fair.
That's a good one. I want to make sure we're clear on that
but
one.
I think we misstated that, but I think the point stands that the system that they built with tying progression to loot crates and the randomization element, again, it's something that people are... increasingly, again, people just don't like it. It's not every time they put it out there now, whether it's Forza or any other game that's currently doing it. The randomization is, some people find it fun, but I think you're seeing a lot of people saying, I kind of just want to know what I'm getting. Yeah, yeah. I want to play the game, earn something, and get it, as opposed to earn like another pull on the fruit machine.
Yeah,
that is not fun.
And then finally, you're wrong comes from Awesome-tastic. He or she says, well, it's a Taylor Swift icon, so I want to say she. Greg said that EA is working on games like Unravel and A Way Out. Not technically true. They are both being published by EA under the EA Originals label, which is EA's indie game label. So these games are not technically made by EA, just published and probably funded by EA. Well, yeah. But EA is still making that game happen. I don't think someone at EA Redwood Shores is working on it.
A Way Out is another great example. I don't think you're going to see these kind of games aren't going to go away. They might end up being slightly less of the overall picture than they have been in the past. The question is, what replaces them? Is it carrot and stick? Is it constant DLC? Like, you need to go get this now.
They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
It'll all work itself out.
I love the optimism.
Well, I mean, we course correct, right? Like, I feel like when we're like, hey, we don't fucking put waggle into every game. Here's more waggle. We're like, fuck you. We're not buying games anymore. Hey,
all right, here's less waggle.
Here's the Wii U and this shitty ass gamepad. No, we don't want that. Fuck you. Nobody bought it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and then people have to respond to that shit. And that's, I'm talking about like hardware stuff, really, right? Like,
no one ever gets it right first time. It's constant trial and error, and we're seeing a lot of trial and error right now.
If you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about before jumping into your questions, comments, concerns, giving you perspective, and hanging out and being bros and sisses with you. Inclusionary. I mean, I'd always be your brother, I guess. But Andrea's here sometimes. She'd be your sis. It's a whole rigmarole. Remember, you can go to twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, watch it live, youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, watch it later, or listen on podcast services around the globe, no matter where you watch it or listen to it. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Please consider supporting us over on patreon.com/kindoffunny. It keeps the lights on. Gary Whitta, you are a national treasure.
Thank you for having me.
You're not even from
this
nation.
Always a pleasure to come here. I enjoy it.
What, you got anything to pimp? Your book's still out, right? People can buy the book.
Book is out. Star Wars Rebels, Monday night. I wrote that episode.
Oh, all right.
In the Name of the Rebellion.
All right.
It's an epic two-parter.
Yeah.
I wrote the first part, the first half hour. It's like two episodes jammed into one.
Sure.
So I wrote the first episode. Matt Mikniewicz wrote the second part. And it's really, really cool because you know how like everything's in the same universe now. And the characters in Rebels exist in the same universe as Rogue One and the original trilogy films. And it's all coming together. And what you see, they just dropped the first couple of clips of it. What you'll see on Monday is the episode where Kanan and Ezra and Hera and the whole Rebels crew arrive at Yavin 4 for the first time and like actually join like the rebellion you know from the movies.
That's awesome.
And Mon Mothma is in it. Saw Gerrera from Rogue One is back. Forest Whitaker came back to do the voice.
Wow.
Genevieve O'Reilly, who played Mon Mothma in Rogue One, is back as well in the voice role. And it's really, really, it was really cool for me to write that particular episode because some of my favorite characters that I got to play with in Rogue One now here in animation in that world and seeing the Rebels, the animated world, kind of join with the live action world that we know from Rogue One and New Hope is really cool. Monday night, Disney XD.
Don't miss it. Monday night. Tomorrow, the host is Candy Andy. Until then, it's been our pleasure to serve you.